I got, I won't tell you who it's from to remain confidential, but it came in this morning and it said, "Good morning. I had to let you know how much I am enjoying The Compassionate Samurai. I started the book Thursday night and have not missed a night reading it, which for me is incredible as I am usually not a reader. I don't want to put it down as each chapter has such impact on me. Hope on today's call you can stress to everyone how they need to read this book." Thank you for contributing that. This is some of the comments I'm getting from the field who are really enjoying the material. So let's dig in and go further with the book. We dealt with chapters 1 and 2 last week, and of course I got tons of feedback on that. That call, a lot of people are using that call to help a lot of people that aren't in Manitou in other areas of their life. Yes, Roz.
Mary Jo, sorry, it's really difficult to hear you. You're very faint, and it almost sounds as if you're fading in and out a little.
Really?
You can get a little
okay.
Closer.
I don't know if I can, maybe I can get another phone. Hang on a second, let me try that. Is everybody else having problems, or are we just another phone issue? I keep telling people to use *3 to increase the volume on your own phone if you're having a hard time hearing me.
It hasn't made a difference.
Yeah, I use *3, and I can hardly hear you.
You can still hardly hear me. Hang on a second. Let me try a different phone. Hang on.
I can't hear you either.
Okay, is this... Hello?
Yeah, say more.
Is this phone better? Hello?
It's worse.
Sounds good so far.
Sounds good so far, thanks, Susan. Okay, well, just maybe there's something wrong with that phone. So we will just keep shifting. We got 3 or 4 of them, so we'll just keep making sure it works for you because I want to make sure everybody can hear it. Is that better? A-okay, everybody?
Not
most
really.
Important that we're all hearing it. Yeah. Okay, great. All right, so let's go forward. So, and I hope
still having everything. Difficulty hearing you, and the *3 hasn't made any difference.
Yeah, *3 is not making a difference. Are you hearing me better, though, off of this phone than the one I was just on?
Very minimally.
Really?
Still have to sit over the phone.
Wow. Okay, let me, I'm doing the same thing I do every Monday morning.
I hear you much better, Mary Jo.
Yeah,
you
I
can
hear
it much
better.
Better? Okay, great. Do I have everybody on mute? Let me just try to, I'll mute everybody again, so I'm just going to mute it just in case I miss some people because I changed phones. I don't know if the mute carries forward. Oh, Lydia says doesn't affect it. Okay, good. I just need my tech person to help me on that. Okay, great. So let's jump in and talk about *3 and *4 in The Compassionate Samurai. And the *3 is about contribution. And I love the Winston Churchill quote that you'll find in your outline today. It just is such a statement about life. It's, we make a living by what we get. We make a life by what we give. And that is just, you know, if you want another quote that you can put up, of course, by now my wall would just be all quotes and I would be totally confused on which ones are most impactful on my life. But this one is one of my favorites of all time because I truly believe that our lives are about how much we give. And that's why we want so desperately to be in a position and put ourselves in positions where we're able to give. And that's not just financially, but it's give of our time, our energy, our efforts, our love to other people. And that's really what defines us as human beings. And contribution to me is a huge word because this is what are our most important values in our life. And every one of us is very different. There's no right and wrong in doing a core value analysis. It's just, it's a Sherlock Holmes, it's an approach of self-awareness about what are the most important values in your life. And when I did my core value analysis for the first time about, I don't know, it must have been 6 years ago at this point or 7 years ago, digging deep and saying what's most important. And that's a very difficult task. Some of you have been through that process with me in my pathway to presidential class because I actually teach that and do that in the class. And my number one core value came out to be contribution. So, you know, I love living in this realm. I think this is what causes me to be most emotionally charged and passionate in my life is when I'm in a mode of contribution. And I just think this word just resonates in such a way, and that's where we want to be in life is how do we pour in and impact lives. So let's look at contribution and what it means to different people. Some people, we have conditions around giving, and some people do that. They give, but they only give depending on what they're going to get back. And that's an attitude that I call it an immature status of understanding contribution, an immature status of giving. I don't mean it to be a negative connotation of immature. I just mean it's something that's it's an early stage of learning how to give, that people start by giving to try to get something back. Now, some people never get out of that realm. I mean, I've even seen some people in Manatech. In fact, I won't mention names or anything, but I've seen some presidentials in Manatech actually have a theory that, you know, you don't let somebody do something for you unless you force them to buy an all-star pack or something. It's just a really incredible thing. And part of giving is receiving. So that means that you take things, you know, when you become a great recipient, you don't demand somebody do something on the other side for you. You're taking advantage of a relationship. And that's called trading, not giving. So our world is about giving, not trading. It's about giving. And when you look at the word, you know, if you look at the word samurai, the word means to serve. And it's about how do we serve other people? What is the bigger picture in life? How do we open ourselves up to acknowledging that there's a greatness out there, a need out there that we need to step into? And how can we be serving others versus what's in it for me? Those are two different attitudes. So when you start growing into that and saying, how can I serve others without any concept of what it means to you, that's the beauty of it. That's one of the beauties of what I see in Manatech, because when I look at other network marketing companies like, you know, Amway and some of the other ones, and of course I've never been in any other one, but I hear these stories and I see the attitudes about not cross-lining. In other words, not supporting people in other downlines. And I think, wow, what is that all about? I mean, some of that really makes no sense. It doesn't make any sense at all to me that we wouldn't pour into each other. Because if the only people you're willing to pour into are people in your own organization, then you're saying, what's in it for me? You see the difference of your approach, that it's all about what's in it for me. When really, if we are going to help people, why don't we help everyone? Why don't we pour into everyone? And that's the bigger picture. How do we serve others in a big way instead of isolating ourselves just to what it means for us, what we get back from it? Giving to yourself is another really critical part of the whole concept of giving and serving, because in the book they compared a martyr to a compassionate samurai. A martyr is somebody who typically feels guilty whenever they take care of themselves, where a compassionate samurai believes in taking care of themselves as they lead a life of service. In other words, if you don't take care of yourself, I'm going to suggest you're not going to be a very good service to other people. And you're not going to be a balanced person. You're not going to have the fullness of life, and you're not going to be able to give to people as you really could. You're going to shortchange other people in your giving process because you're incapable of giving to yourself. So we need to really look at what are we doing for ourselves. Some people have no problem with that concept. They always are focused on themselves, and that's taking it to the far extreme of being self-centered instead of being a giver. But what I'm talking about is looking at your life and saying, how am I treating myself? Developing self-honoring practices. Whatever that might be for you, look at your life, and I think it's a great exercise. If all of you today would just either now on the phone or later after we get off, just make a note to yourself to make a list of what you do in your life on self-honoring practices. And when I first did that analysis through one of the classes I took, self-development courses I took ages ago, I sat down and it was really hard for me to come up with anything. I mean, I was just kind of like, my sheet of paper remained fairly barren. And then somebody gave me some ideas, and I said, well, I do that, but I probably don't do it enough, you know, and I don't dedicate time to it. And so after going through that exercise and understanding how much I needed to start taking care of Mary Jo before I could take care of my niece, my nephew, my husband, my family, my, you know, organization, people, you know, that I'm totally committed to, and the world, which is where my commitment extends, is I needed to take care of me. So that's when I started making investments in things like I have quiet time and I demand it. I have workout time and I demand it for myself. These are things that you just make as a priority in your life. So, you know, if you made a commitment, let's say that you said, hey, I'm going to exercise 3 times a week, and you made a commitment at the beginning of New Year's resolution on that. That's a self-honoring, making, you know, you can say, Mary Jo, it's a pain inflicting, it's a self-suffering. And I go, yeah, but it's self-honoring. Because it's focusing on you. And so many of us, one of the reasons we stop working out is because we feel that it's selfish behavior. We rationalize that it's, all about us, so don't. But the critical nature of it is, it's about health. It's about you being balanced. It's about you feeling good about yourself. It's also, you know, exercise is one of the number one ways of generating serotonin in your body, which is a happy hormone. And as I taught over last weekend, I talked about, you know, you want to get off Prozac. When 60% of Americans are on Prozac or antidepressants, you know, one of the number one ways to get off is to exercise. It just generates. So the concept is pour into you. Be ready to and willing to receive by giving to yourself. And the only time that he discusses the concept of when is giving to yourself, when you're really taking. So it's not about, it's about, you know, taking from other people. In order to give to me, I have to take away from you. Then you start evaluating, is that really honoring me? Is that giving to myself, or am I really stealing from others? So get that balance in your life so you understand that and you can make that evaluation as you develop self-honoring practices. But always appreciate the value and blessing of life, which is what we all have, is life, a gift we have. So honor yourself and make sure you stay balanced in that life. The benefits of giving, in his book, he examines six different benefits of giving. One is it feels good. This is another one. I just talked about exercise being one. I laughed because I wrote down cheaper than Prozac, right? I mean, if you have a mechanism that brings joy in your life, why are you not, you know, involving yourself in that mechanism on a more frequent basis? I mean, when I got the clue when I did that whole value analysis and contribution came up number one on my list, that's what makes me, you know, people go, Mary Jo, how can you do every weekend go and do area meetings and pour into people and you have all these things and you're doing all these trainings and all these calls? And I go, are you kidding me? That's like, I mean, it's like the biggest rush in my life to be able to help people. And that just, that's my core value. It's my number one value, and it gives me the joy. It just gives me, you know, boundless joy in my life to be able to help other people, to be the best they can be. So we just direct ourselves to pour into that. And no matter what your core value structure is, when you contribute and you give to other people, you are going to get a feeling of goodness from it. So, you know, one comment was just bring around $100 bills. I reduced it to 50 because most people won't be handing out $100 bills, but, you know, maybe a $50 bill, even a $20 bill. And just get yourself in a position that you have a wallet full of these that, you know, you can freely give to somebody as you walk through your day. The other great example of this is you like driving through fast food restaurants. And I don't do this because I don't eat at fast food restaurants, but I have when we have done it, when I'm with my husband sometimes, it's just hilarious. He laughs at me because he just, but I say, you know, here, like, as we're paying for whatever he might be ordering, I just say, would you pick up the order of the car behind us? And the women will look at, they don't understand. They can't understand. First of all, our society doesn't get this kind of giving, so they'll look at you with this quizzical look. But you say, what's the car behind us? And they said, oh, do you know who they are? And I said, no, I don't know who they are. And they're like, you want to buy their order, and you don't even know who they are. And I go, yeah, that's what I'm telling you. And it might cost me another $15, but great. You know, that car drives up to them, to their little stand, says, okay, how much we owe you? And they go, the woman in front of you bought your, I mean, what a great thing. What a cool thing. And, you know, it just brings a lot of joy. So we give because it makes us feel good. And it doesn't, again, that's not giving for recognition. It's giving for anything. It's just pure out just giving. We give to get, okay? And that's not like expectational. It's we give to get because we understand the biblical principle of as you sow, so shall you reap. You give service. In Manatech, we give service to our associates. We send them manna mails. We call them from time to time. We send them books. We send them pens. We send them goodies at Christmas time or once every quarter, all that kind of stuff. We talked about this when we reviewed Timothy Templeton's book, and we'll talk about that. But we give to people, and we give to customers, and we give to prospects. We give of our time and our energy and our love and our concern and our compassion because that's how we understand that as we sow, so shall we reap. So it helps with our reputation. It helps us get new customers, and it gives us a great reputation. If you give only to get, in other words, that also is going to create a reputation. So you get back into that trading realm. I'm only going to give you this if you give me back XYZ. Well, then you get a reputation. That reputation will precede you in the industry. And it's not a tasteful reputation to have. So you want to make sure you work hard all the time, and you always are out there giving, no matter what's in, without expectations. But you know that as you sow, so shall you reap, because that's a universal principle. It's a godly principle. It's a universal principle. The other aspect of this gets into a job. You have a lot of people that work at jobs, and they say, well, Mr., I really don't like my job. And I said, so is that why you like calling in sick extra days? You go home with headaches. You don't really give it your full. And they go, well, it's really hard. This is their argument. Mary Jo, it's really hard to give my full attention to a job I don't like. I don't like my boss. I don't like the environment. And I'm just starting to apply for other jobs. So I can't emphasize is to give your job 100%, even if you don't like your job, because it may not be about this employer. It may be about another employer. You are impacting lives in everything you do and say. And to start shortchanging one employer because you know you're leaving the job, where do you get off on that? You never know how that's going to come back to haunt you. So don't do it. And I'll tell you, it's haunting you right now just by your own ability to fall back and say, I can give and then I can slow down. I don't have to give it my all. I'm not going to contribute. I'm not going to, you know, I can leave early. I'm going to cheat on my hours. And you start developing really bad behavior. So it's robbing you of your core integrity. So understand that everywhere it is, no matter where it is, as you sow, so shall you reap. So, you know, if you shortchange an employer, you're going to be shortchanging yourself, and you never know how it's going to impact your relationships, but it will impact you. Giving also builds loyalty. Your customers will stay. You'll keep your customers, like Timothy Temple, and that's where you really get into Referral of a Lifetime and the gifting program there. It's about making sure you establish loyalty in your customer. It's one of my reasons when I work with people, I always say, hey, I'm hanging in this with you. As long as it takes, let's achieve the health results you're looking for. And I work with people, and if it's not advertised, it might be that they're lacking omega-3s, or it might be acupuncture, or it might be NAIT, or it might be some other form of health, because health involves many, many different aspects of our life. So we want to be able to be open to open the doors and open ideas for people to look at other opportunities they have to achieve optimal health besides just Ambertope. And that's what builds loyalty. When people see you fighting for them each step of the way, that builds loyalty. And it's all about giving, pouring into people, instead of signing them up and saying, hey, take this product, call me in 6 months, let me know how you feel. And I'm not suggesting that's what people do, but sometimes we get in a tendency in network marketing to just try to sign up as many people as we can. We get on this hustle-bustle prospecting routine, and we never pour into the people we bring on board. And it's one of the reasons the I Can program is structured the way it is, because I want you, when you get somebody new, I want you pouring into that person. I want you training them, calling them 3 to 4 times a week, and pouring into them. So they feel empowered to make a difference in their life. They feel like you really care about them. They get the idea of how much you care, because that's going to help build loyalty with you in an incredible way so that you can produce the best possible results for them and for you. So critical that we understand that loyalty issue. Another impact of giving is it increases your power. You can change this world through giving in many ways. You just want to openly give. And through openly giving, you can gain recognition, and you can help change the world through recognition. The next way to impact you, another item that impacts you, is not giving, is basically giving without recognition, because that increases your power to impact the world as well. In fact, it's more powerful to give without recognition than it is with recognition. Well, why does that, you know, some people might think that doesn't make a lot of sense. I'm going to tell you, it makes all the sense in the world. Giving and giving and giving to people and not having any recognition around it is what will cause people to not second-guess your motive behind giving. Sometimes when people give just to get recognition, people go, well, the only reason she gave it is da-da-da-da-da. You see, they start rationalizing of your motivation for giving. When you give anonymously, when you truly pour your life into this world, and we can think about people that totally change this world by giving without recognition. There are tons of people out there that never took any, Mother Teresa, you know, Martin Luther King. There are a lot of characters and people that we know of, national figures, that international figures, that had that heart of giving and really never, ever looked at any kind of recognition. They wanted no recognition. That wasn't their pursuit. And it was just about giving their lives. And the incredible thing that happens, that But the more you focus on others, the more they're going to find the opportunity to focus on others themselves. You change the world. Because if you go out in this world and you're self-centered and you focus on you, what you're going to do is you're going to have create a world around you that's more self-centered. And then what happens, people who are self-centered or are focusing on themselves, we begin to get in a competitive environment. And that's what happens in a lot of network marketing companies. When they have the focus on you, and again, that whole concept about I can only give to my downline, I'm focusing on me and what I can achieve, then it becomes a competition. We just drive each other by competition. Well, competition can be healthy, but it also can be very unhealthy. If you had a cooperative world instead, in other words, the giving was about focusing on others all the time, so it didn't matter about what was in it for you. Now you're building an aura of a cooperative world that builds incredibly, opens up absolutely new possibilities in terms of what we can achieve together. And that's the kind of how I look at my ICANN Presidential Advisory Committee. We have 15 presidentials that are totally committed to be on a call and program and build it into the best possible program it could be. And we're putting together tape calls, and we are adding a new one on the website this week, and they're all giving me ideas about what the website should look like and what ideas, and we're going to aggregate all those and build the best possible website. But look at the difference between that cooperative mentality among that group of presidentials, just saying, what a great opportunity for all of us to be able to pour in and make the best possible tool for the field, compared to each one of us trying to go out and do our own thing and have competitive sites and competitive this and competitive. And it just it's like, what a beautiful thing that you can just pour into each other and give without recognition and just, you know, make it a part of what's going on. Some people even have said to me, it's cute because if you look at people go, well, Mary Jo, how do I know it's your website? If you go to manatrain.net, you don't even see my name. I mean, it's all different things. Lydia might have said where Mary Jo's travels are or something, but you don't. That site is not about Mary Jo. That site is about you. It's about you as Manatechers. It's a training site for you. It's a training, a helpful tool for you. It needs no recognition of who put it together, anything else. It's just a site to support you to be the best you can be in Manatech. And that's the neatness of just always focus on others and watch what happens. You will help change the world and get that feeling of cooperation from people. Another benefit of giving is it increases your spirituality. As you give away, you arise to a point of acknowledging money has no hold on you. That's a really cool thing. That gets contrary to our money programs, because money is the number one issue around which we have crazy belief systems. There are so many different belief systems and paradigms around money that just really eat at the core of us as people. So as you give away and you get rid of money, you're really... you're destroying the power of money in you. I talked a little bit about this at our church leadership meeting yesterday about how, you know, we know the scripture about we can only have one master. We can't be, have money be our master and God be our master as well. And we're all familiar with that scripture. And yet, what are we doing every day of our life? We're letting money control our decisions. And isn't the fact that money controls all of our decisions a way of giving money power over us? When you give money power over you, it's sinful behavior. So it's about getting rid of it. It's about acknowledging that money means nothing. And I don't mean be wasteful with money. I'm just trying to open people's eyes to the possibility that are we really walking the right walk when we let money control our decisions? I'm suggesting not. And that means we need to be in a posture where we can freely give and it doesn't impact us. We don't get scared and nervous and all this stuff. We come from a different place because money shouldn't hold a power over us, or it's very hard for us to be a spiritual creature. So if you want to increase your spirituality, you've got to be able to release that concept that money has that hold over you. People who don't tithe, who believe in tithing, but they don't tithe because they're short on money, I'm telling you, it's eating away at your spiritual status. And you've got to understand that, start seeing, why am I doing that? Why am I letting, again, money control my life and rob from me as a human being? big concepts. Just work on it. Look at your life. Say, wow, how can I shift? What is it going to take to make this a difference? You also need to look at the source. The source isn't us. It's God's the source. So why are we limiting our creator? If you name anyone of almost any faith, they will show up as huge, big givers out there. And because they understand that the source is not them. I'm not the source. The source of everything I have is not Mary Jo. It's God. And so I can freely give because it's his to be given. It's not mine to start with. So you got to get clarity around that aspect of it. The next concept is give them what they want, not what you want to give. A lot of times we sit in a posture where we're willing to give, but only the things that we have that we see that we have excess amounts of. Like if we have extra time, we're willing to give time. If we have extra money, we'll give money. But you're only going to give what we have extra. And I used to fall victim to that because I saw myself, like, you know, with church and other things, I would just become a giver. I would be tithing and I would tithe more because I had money was not a problem for me. Time was a big problem because I spent so much time in my Manitech business or this or that or whatever. So I didn't dedicate time. And when I started analyzing that, I thought, wow, that's really not a way to open up all the possibilities and abundance the world has for me, is by limiting only what I had excess amount of. So that's when I had to make a shift in my life and say, you know what, Mary Jo, you've got to find time. You make time for the things that are important to you, no matter what your life looks like. So quit limiting yourself in the things. And if you start giving the things you have the least of, watch how that opens up your life. All I can tell you from experience, it's phenomenal, the shift that happens in your life. It doesn't seem logical to us, and that's why we stay away from it. But the reality is, you know, as you give away the things you have the least of, that opens up your coffers to receive more of it. In fact, there's that famous concept, if you wanted something, what do you give? Let's say people say, I want more love in my life, and I go, well, give more love. And they go, look at me like I'm crazy. If I want more love and I want to, how can I get, and I said, that's how you attract it. It's really the law of attraction. If you want to get to basics about this, you've heard about the law of attraction. A lot of you have seen The Secret and read the books and whatever your feeling is around that, you know, the reality is the law of attraction is a law that really works. So, you know, you want more friends, then be a friend to more people. So what you want, what you have to give more of, that's what attracts things in the world. So it's really a cool thing. So it's like, again, you give the things that they want for you. So look at that instead and look at a different willingness to give and a different aspect of what you're giving. Why don't people give? Why is it that we aren't givers out there? Why is it, what holds us back from giving? And I'm not suggesting any of you on the call are not givers. I'm just saying what holds us back from maybe perhaps the amount we give or how we give or what restrains us. And five major reasons for that he sets forth in the book, they don't think there's enough. In other words, we don't give because we have a scarce mentality. We believe somehow in our lives when we were little kids, when mom brought that apple pie and put it on the table and it only had 8 pieces and there are 9 members of the family, we thought, oh my gosh, that's all there is. And we got this idea that the world was like that apple pie, that there's only X amount and we've got to go after it. We do the same thing in Manitech. People get angry with each other. They don't build cross-line organizations and build unity in Manitech associations and cities and communities because they're afraid that those people might take their prospects. Because there are only so many people. I don't know about you guys, but I haven't seen a limit in number of people any time in my life. And we're making babies like crazy. We're going through a new baby boomer revolution right now that's bigger than the ones I was a member of. And that's a fact. So don't tell me we're going to run out of people to approach with a glyconutrient story. So it's scarcity mentality that's controlling your life. You have an either-or mentality, and that's another crazy thing that really sits in us. Some people say, if I have wealth, I can't be a value, I can't be a high-value person. We make these things up, these are rationalizations. Anytime you find yourself going either-or in your head, start evaluating whether you're making that up, because there's no rule out there about either-or. You're just making it up. And usually those kind of things, when you get into that either-or, and I have that happen with new associates. some of them jump on board. I had one particular who jumped on board. She won. She was the fastest winner of the first Alaska cruise. She wasn't. She was a brand new associate and won the Alaska cruise in like 6 weeks or something. You know. And she said, Mary Jo, you just drew a picture of me and you told me I need to fill in the circles. And I we went out there and we blitzed it together. And you know what? We won the Alaska cruise together. And it was great. She was a big winner of the Alaska cruise. And then the next month she came to me and she kind of stopped. And I'm like, you came out of the chute like that. And she said to me, well, Mary Jo, I had to give up so much energy and so much time around my family. I'm not willing to sacrifice that. And, you know, I can either be a good mom or I can be a great Manitoucker, but I can't be both. And I was like, oh, boy, here we go. You know, how many times do you hear that? Show me where that rule is in any good book. It's non-existent. You make it up in your head to rational. Is there not a way you can be a great Manitoucker and be a great mom? Absolutely. I dare say there are tons of you that are great moms and great Manitouckers in Manitouck. It's just how you delegate your time, how you best utilize the time you have, and you can be both. Your choice. It's just a choice. It's not an either-or issue. Or stuff, you're limiting God. You know, he said, I always love this, and you guys hear it from me a lot, that he, you know, anything is possible through him. So when you start doing this either-or stuff, what are you saying? No, Lord, you were wrong. You were wrong. I'm right. I can't do that and that. Even though anything is possible to you, I can't do it, so you're wrong. So start getting out of limited resource mentality. A great, great, great books to read around this are, of course, all of your Paul Zane Pilsner stuff, because he's an economist that understands unlimited resources, unlimited. And I truly believe that. And I was trained as an economics undergraduate in all the Keynesian economics that we have limited resources. We're going to have a crisis by the night. This is back in the early 70s when I was in college. And all we learned was that by 1990 or 2000, we're going to have a disaster in this country because we're going to be out of oil resources and we're going to be out of air and we're going to be out of water. And I'm like, okay, here we are. We still have oil, we still have water, and we still have air, okay? You know, I mean, we had all this stuff and all of our natural resources were going to be depleted. But see, the problem with coming from that is it's all about scarcity. We have unlimited, we have incredible powers with our minds to create things. We have unlimited resources if we work together to be creative in what we come out with. So focus on the creativity aspect of it rather than the limitation aspect and watch what you do. Just like that apple pie. When we looked at that apple pie and we said the 8 pieces, oh, my gosh, we have limited. Well, why can't we make another apple pie? There's always a solution. But we get stuck in the problem, and then we get limited in our thinking. Okay, another reason why we don't give is we're self-centered. We really, if we're really connected, then why focus on you? In other words, if you really look at the oneness about all of us, that we're all connected on this planet, then why are we focusing on ourselves? Get yourself out of the way. Read Purpose Driven Life. It's not about me. That's chapter one. Another reason we don't give is because we think others are not worthy of the gift. Wow, that kind of happens in Manitouck as well. I see it with people saying, well, Mary Jo, I'm not going to put people underneath them because, you know, if they want a team bonus, let them go find their other 3 people. And I'm like, where does it say that in Scripture that we're not to bless people? He said, you know, well, there are a lot of people training out there that we should never build on somebody else. And I'm like, you know, where's all that coming from? Why can't I bless somebody in my life? This is about giving. When you start making rules like that, you make rules around not giving. And how can rules to not give ever be right? I think that when you look at people and you say, hey, I teach people how to fish, I don't give them fish, that's a different attitude. If somebody says to me, Mary Jo, I want to build a business, and I say, okay, great. I'm not going to go out and sign 10 people up for them, but I will work with them diligently. I will do meetings, I'll do 3-day calls, I'll come and do breakfast meetings or go out to lunch with their prospects, whatever it takes. But you know what? They're going to participate fully because that's the training ground. That's what's called teaching people how to fish versus giving them fish. But if I have a consumer leg, I have extra people I need to sign up, and I'm just going to, why would I build a brand new leg? Why wouldn't I support other people? If I've got a consumer out there, if or even a business builder, I say, you know, if you get 2, I'll give you 1 more or something. Give them some motivation. But I love gifting. It's about blessing people. So what is this concept of worthiness? You're taking up in your life some scale of justice that you have to maintain. A compassionate samurai is not about justice. He is about mercy. Think about that. Okay, other reasons why we don't give, they believe they had already given. So that assumes, again, what? That there's a limited amount we give. Trust me, there's no cap. You say, well, but the Bible says only give 10% back. I say, are you kidding me? That's a minimal. Tithing is a minimal. You and I kind of set a goal that we're trying to eventually, on our plan, live off of 10% we make and give away 90%. And that may not even be great because maybe we can do 5%. I don't know, but that's kind of a goal we have. There's no cap on how much you can give. I've already given. I loved it. I did a group meeting up in Canada one time, and this guy said, well, Mary Jo, we already are supporting 2 orphanages and da-da-da. This is what we're doing. I go, great. Can I work with you? He said, sure. And I said, are those 2 orphanages the only orphanages in the whole world? Aren't there more orphanages? And by the time I got through with this play on this fellow in Canada, it was like the whole room kind of got the idea. When we start, and I wasn't picking on him, it was just an example of where we go with our thought process, that we feel like after we've poured into this area, we go, I'm done, or I've done my share. My share. What is your share? What is your share? Define your share of giving to me. Tell me what that looks like. I don't know where you get the idea that there's share concept out there of what your share of giving is. Okay? Because giving isn't about, you know, what everybody else is doing. It's about you. It's your heart, who you are, your fulfillment in life. So if you think that means it's a share, well, that's your definition of it for you. But I suggest you reevaluate that definition. And then the last thing about not giving is their ego tells them this is really beneath them. That really kind of blows me away. That's a whole concept I really didn't grapple with much at all. Samurai never allowed ego to interfere with being of service. But this really has more about service, it's about service, about what kind of service. Like, you know, I'm not going to go and clean up after church picnic because that's beneath me to go around the facility and pick up the garbage and the papers and the deep balloons and stuff because that's for other people. I don't do those things. It's beneath me. You see how our egos sometimes get involved? There's nothing that's beneath you. It's all about contribution. No matter what it is, it's about contribution. And it doesn't matter what your name is, what your initials are after your name. None of that matters at all. It's about contribution. So don't let ego get in the way of giving. Okay, next. Give what you have very little of instead of what you have a lot of. We kind of already talked about that, that if we empty out what we have little of, guess what? You're open to receive. It's a mechanism of you being open to receive. You'll get more back of those things that you give up. So that's what you want to do, is make sure that you're giving more of what you don't have, because that's going to give you more of that. Same concept we talked about earlier. And then the last thing I put in the section on this, oh my gosh, I have a whole nother chapter to go through, so let's go quickly. The Go-Giver Principles, I just outlined them for you. Some of you already have the book, but let me just go through quickly what they are. The law of value is as follows. Your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. The law of compensation. Your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. The law of influence. Your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. The law of authenticity. The most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. And the law of receptivity, the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. Wow, that's great. So if you guys haven't gotten the book Go Giver, those are the principles outlined in that book, the 5 laws that he talks about, all of which are all about one thing that's called contribution. Yeah, critical. Okay, chapter 4 is focus. Ooh, this is a tough chapter for some of you because a lot of people have focus issues, and I know I actually taught a power training on it because it's a huge issue out there. We have a problem focusing, and focus is a critical, critical, critical skill. Why? Because, what is focus? Focus is our ability to direct attention, efforts, activities in one direction without diversion or distractions. oh, some of us are distracted by the drop of a hat. I mean, it's so easy for us to get distracted. It's easy for us because we're allowing it to happen. We have focus problems by choice. And then choice becomes habit, but you can choose to change that habit. They're bad habits. What is the value of focus? Well, focus is unbelievable in terms of when you look at what you get from focusing. You can basically, without focus, you won't achieve anything. You'll be that meandering generality out in this world instead of a meaningful specific. I love that analysis. Do you want to be a meandering generality or a meaningful specific? Ask yourself that question. Well, people who are meaningful specifics have tremendous focus. The incredible power of focus is leverage. And I thought this was a great analysis to run by you guys because we understand the power of leverage in network marketing. That's what that's the whole power of being able to like do the ICANN program and get the Platinum Presidential and only bring in 12 people. That's the power of leverage, the amazing power of leverage. Well, focus has that exact same power. Focus leverages power. Liken it to a magnifying glass focused on the power of the sun. You know, the power of the sun comes down and it can warm us. But if you focus it in a magnifying glass, now you can start a fire. And we need to understand that that's what focus does and that's what focus means to you. Make that analysis. Look at that and look at the power that you create as a human being. You're the same way. You take all of that can start a fire. Whereas unfocused, it's just a little warmth out there. The difference is night and day with what you can do. But we also got to get over the fact that we're not the source of the power. People sometimes get caught up in them being the source of the power. Don't lose sight of that. The source of the power is outside of us. For many of us, that's God. He's the source of the power, right? What are we as human beings? We're just the magnifying glass. We take the source of that power and we put it through us and we're just the tool to be used to focus that energy and focus that direction, focus our faith, focus our actions and our energies and activities to create incredible results. Without focus, we're just splattering all over. So we need to get that focus in. Focus challenges the average people, so let's stop being average. Okay, we have focus challenges. We have different challenges that keep us from being that person who's capable of focusing. And the rest of that chapter, of the focus chapter, really isolates on three specific areas that we have challenges. So let's look at those three. Number one, there's a challenge that we have. We are not focused because this whole chapter was about average people. He started with they are not focused, but I put it in terms of we because I think we want to deal with us instead of pointing fingers at other people. So we are not focused because we are unwilling or unable to focus. Unwilling or unable to focus. So first let's look at unwilling to focus. Why would somebody be unwilling to focus? I think sometimes people look at the word focus as if it means that you have to put a lot of work and a lot of energy and a lot of discipline around it so you're not willing to give up freedoms in your life because you rather have a freewheeling lifestyle. Focus takes all that. But the reality is focus doesn't take all that. It does take some discipline, but it doesn't take any extra energy, a lot of work, and a lot of effort. It's just about really being on task, right? It's really about being on task, and you want to keep on task. So you get rid of this concept of takes too much work or effort to do it. It's untrue. That's a falsity. That's something you're making up in your head. So get rid of that belief system, and if you don't free yourself up from that belief, you're never going to get focused because you feel like it's robbing you of something. The other thing is unable to focus. So in the book, he wrote down, what is your life's purpose? He asked that question. To which I answered. And then he said, what three things are you absolutely going to get done today? How many of you can answer those questions without hesitation? If you say about your life purpose, you go, I don't know, I have no idea. Well, then you're getting back into that meandering generality. It's hard to have a focus on our life, on directional, if we don't have a life purpose. How do you get focused on what you do every day if you don't have a life purpose? I don't know. It's a good question. So if we're unable to put some direction to our life, then we're going to always be incapable of focus. The other thing is, what three things are you actually going to get done today? That's just about how do you organize your day? Do you stay on track? Do you stay on task? If you don't have tasks in front of you that you're committed to completing, you can't stay focused. Then you're going to be answering the phone, answering the door, going out here, going here, going running over to Bed Bath & Beyond, going grocery shopping, going here, going, and all of a sudden you're going to go, like so many of us do. We get done with the day, we go, where did that day go? Does that happen to you? That's unfocused. And don't let it happen to you. All it is about habits that you form. Make a list. Stay focused. Say, this is what I'm accomplishing today. Boom. Things happen in our life, but you stay focused and you accomplish the things you outline. And because that's what's going to challenge you from ever staying focused if you let distractions control your life. That's really what you don't want to have happen. The second reason that we're second challenge that we have getting focused is we focus on things that make us ineffective. Compassionate samurai focus on service and contribution regardless of their circumstances. Others focus on themselves. So know your life purpose and focus on it. Look like people like Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, all these people. They endured incredible stress, incredible distractions in their life, and loss of liberty, and in this instance, loss of life. But it was all in order to pursue their vision for a better world for everyone. They had a clear vision in their life. They lived each day as if it was their last. And that's an interesting concept. If you got up this morning and you knew today was your last day of your life, how would you live today? Would you live it differently than what you're doing right now? And you start asking that question. If you start asking that question, every productive, focused human being. And that's how he talks about the compassionate samurai. They wake up in the morning and they go, this is the last day of my life. What am I going to accomplish today? And watch what you get done. You take a totally different view of how valuable your time is, and you get very much on focus. When you look at your life and you say, well, I'm going to live another 50 years so I can do, what happens is you start procrastinating and you start focusing on your comforts. You start building things about, you know, like a mercantile mentality, like all of a sudden you want things, you desire things and the niceties of life because you have to make the softness because you're going to be here so much longer, so you need all these niceties. Well, isn't that an intriguing concept that if we look at today's the last day of my life, why am I going to change the carpet out in my living room? Or why am I going to go out and buy a new bush? Or why am I mean, I'm not suggesting you don't do some of these things to just keep an environment that you're capable of, but some of us focus on those things every day of our life. That's what robs us of our focus to be productive or to give or to serve or to contribute because we're so focused on our own creature comforts because we're not looking at today as the last day of our life. It's a new mechanism that might allow you to treat your days a little differently and put a prioritization around what you're focusing on and give it much more light. So you put a little sense of urgency. Another thing is forgetting is key to focusing on effective things. Forgetting is key to focusing on effective things. Some of us live in our past. We don't know how to forget and forgive from things in our past, so they end up entering into our lives and robbing us of creating a better future. Other of us, when we have concepts that are given to us, and this is great because it's about the I Can program. When somebody puts something down on paper to us and say, and right away the first thing go, well, I don't know, can I do that? And they always question whether they can do it. A compassionate samurai doesn't say, can I do it? It says, how can I? Notice come from solution immediately rather than get stuck in problem. That's why it's so much fun to go out and introduce the I Can program to people because they'll look at you and someone will go, well, I don't know, Mary Jo. And I go, hey, you know what? That's why the program's called I Can, because some people can and some people can't. And, you know, it's okay. Your choice. It's your belief system, not me to tell you whether you can do it or not. You either believe it or you don't. If you don't, it's fine. Move on. But notice why are they basing the fact that they can't? Because they're basing it based on what they've done in their past. Their past is controlling the future. They live a life of probabilities instead of possibilities. That's a great statement. Are you living your life based on probabilities instead of possibilities? Answer that question for yourself and then see if you can do something different. And the last thing that we talk about real quickly is on the last thing that robs us of focus, that we get focused, but we're still unaware of what surrounds us. And therein lies a real problem. You can say, boy, focus can be a negative too, can't it? Yeah, it can be. If you focus on something to the detriment of everything else around you, now you've lost a balance that's so necessary in your life. So do not lose sight of balance. Be focused, but in a relaxed state. Don't be focused and stressed. Don't be focused and pressureful. Be focused and relaxed. Acknowledge your everything going on around you, but remain focused. So don't allow distractions, but acknowledge your environment. That takes practice for some people because they have a hard time doing that. Some of us, it's almost a multitasking that's taking place. But you stay focused and you remain balanced in your life. That's an ability we need to develop. It's a habit you need to put in your life and force it through. An incredible concept. Okay, people, I'm done. So, great. Any comments, questions about focus, about contribution? Everybody's focused on what they're going to accomplish today, so they have no feedback.
In terms of your exit from the legal profession and what I term as some end time justice principles, and when I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking of it actually in terms of racial reconciliation and how it is that we bring a justice to this world that that has I don't want to say a broader perspective that allows us to open our eyes to something,
mm-hmm.
but I don't see how it can be done without justice.
In terms of, I guess, take it to the next level. How do you achieve justice?
Well, my first question is what is it and what does it look like in terms of, you know, forgive, but there's also principles of reconciliation. There's also relational principles, as you indicate. You can be friendly to, you can stand up in front of the room and be friendly to 12,000 people.
Right.
But you can't really be friend 12,000 people. It's just,
sure.
It's
so what's the solution? The solution isn't that you deny the need to achieve that result. Your solution becomes, how do I personally step in and make a difference? Because there's always a way of making a difference, even as insignificant as I may be in light of the worldly issues. How can I step in and make a difference? So what we do as individuals is we tackle what we're capable of tackling without thinking that we have to eat the entire elephant. As long as I'm biting down and I'm doing my share and I'm contributing and I'm pouring in, that's what I need to be doing. I can't control what everybody else does, but boy, oh boy, just because that issue is so big and it looks like it's something that is unimaginable that we're going to tackle as a world, if I don't do my part, I'm not putting forth the energy in a direction that I believe will help energize others to take on their roles as well. It's kind of the story, Gwen, of the, you know, you can look at this issue and say, is this not the story of the starfish at a whole nother level? But it's that little boy walking on the beach who's picking up one starfish at a time and throwing it back in the ocean. He's out there doing his part. He's doing as much as he possibly can. Is it realistic for him to believe he's going to save all the starfish on that beach? No. There are hundreds of thousands of starfish, and he's only one person. But you know, when that wise man came down and questioned him because he was overwhelmed by the daunting task, because that little boy touched that man's heart, maybe that man spent the rest of his morning throwing the starfish back in, and maybe when people from the hotels around saw the two of them doing it, they rushed down to the beach, and without them doing anything more than doing their share, than pouring in, they might energize an entire community to get out there, and instead of saving 200 starfish, they now saved 25,000 starfish. But if they didn't take their energy and expected any other energy to put in that direction. And that's how we need to tackle each and every problem.
Well, I guess I'm going to just go one more time at this because I'm trying to sort out, you know, something that I, for some reason, I hear differently than other people. I'm not sure why I hear it differently, but I do hear it differently. And it comes out of the you know, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, and rather than I think that we live how we believe. So this little boy believes that he is going to make a difference.
Correct.
And the old man questions that he believes that he can make a difference. Then he knows he believes he makes a difference if he throws one starfish back.
Right.
Maybe he can only bend five times and his arthritis collapses him.
That's it, right.
Wife. He has an appointment with his wife, and he's going to devalue his relationship with his family in order to save starfish. And I do think there is, you have to say no to something in order to say yes to something greater.
Correct.
And good always is the compromise that says, why don't we just do good rather than do our best?
But good is the greatest evil to greatness.
Right,
is. We accept goodness instead of greatness.
Right.
And but you're right. Every time we make
clarity.
A choice to contribute, every time we make a choice to contribute, there's probably something out there that we could have spent our time doing instead, correct? It's because we only have, the time is our only limited asset. But that's where we find what we're passionate about. What are the issues? I can't conquer all the issues in the world. All I can do is help be me. And my goal in terms of what I do, I have an undying passion to help people find their passions. And if I can help other people find their passions and commit to making a difference for their passion, then it's not about which issues I've helped resolve in the world. It's I've helped other people be passionate again and contribute in a significant way that could impact hundreds of thousands of issues. But it's not one distinctive issue. Does that make some sense?
It does. I have just one question, and that is that when you come to a person with an I can mentality who may need encouragement, support, and what I call, I think a lot of people just mistake education. Education is to run alongside of.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that how long am I going to run alongside this? And you did answer the question, and I'll just say a person's name. How long am I going to run alongside of Michelle? She was doing well on Manitech, but then couldn't afford it. And now we found a way for her to begin over again, but she's really discouraged. And, you know, how are we going to say that when we can't say that it actually can mitigate disease, and how are we, you know. So the I can of this is, as you indicated, you know, where is the I can?
Oop, I lost you.
Something. Passion.
I lost you. I lost it. What Jesus said, the I can of this. With I can with Michelle, I don't know if we cut off. Hello, are you still there, Gwen?
I am.
Okay. The I can of how far I go with Michelle is where my heart is in my dedication to that person. What I'm contributing, if I can pour into her and contribute her and help her see some, you know, make a paradigm shift in her life, that's what I pour into. When I get to a point where I feel like my energies aren't well served there because, you know, maybe she's just so stuck, I might give her direction on other ways to get unstuck. I might contribute to her by saying, you know, just like right, give you an instance. Right now I'm sponsoring. My church is stuck. My church is terribly stuck in scarcity mentality and all this kind of stuff going on. There's a lot of shortcomings going on. For three years I've strived to get a quickening at my church. And we're doing that now. So I couldn't pour into each and every individual person in my church and help them get through their scarcity mentality. But I'm coming up with a mechanism that hopefully will at least open the doors to possibilities for them to achieve that themselves. So that's so we take alternative measures to help support people achieve the most positive results in their lives. And that's, you know, I can't take self responsibility whether Michelle achieves that or not, because that's really her choice. But I can do what I can do to give her direction, leadership, and guidance, and then let her make that choice.
Okay.
You follow me?
And I have to confess, you know, I haven't gone through the materials at this point in time to see where the four team members and the I can really, you know, learn these concepts and develop in that, grow in that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, where I'm at with in terms of rather than saying, well, you know, if you can't, you can't.
But that's really at the basis. That comes before you get on the team. Well, if people say they can't, they never get on a team in the first place. The I Can program works from a perspective of once you say you can, now you've made a commitment. Now the bigger issue becomes how do I support that person in playing out that commitment that they've made in their life. So now I'm on a team with this person. They've already said I can, because they can't get on a team unless they say I can, okay?
Right.
Now they're on a team. They've said I can. And now let's say they have problems in the first month trying to find their person. And I support them in any way I can to help them see that they really are capable of doing it. If they
right.
don't achieve the result, we have the Blitz program. We have all these fallbacks. The other thing we have is a coaching program with Coach Roy. So maybe I say, hey, here's another tool. I'm not having the impact on you that I'd like to have to help increase your belief system around this program, and you've made a commitment, and I want to honor you to keep that commitment to yourself and not just discard you. So I'm suggesting, here's an alternative. Sign up for Coach Roy's program and get some development work and some one-on-one coaching with him. It's a 14-week program, and here's a mechanism for you to achieve a better result in your life. Because you and I have already shown you still just aren't moving forward. So here's another mechanism for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I would deal with it in that regard. You get it?
Is Coach Roy a real person or a real
uh-huh.
thing?
Yeah, it's a real program that's running right now. In fact, there are like 25 people in his coaching program around ICANN. And it's just a great
and
way.
It's
a great mechanism to help support people who feel like they're stuck and they're not getting support and being unstuck. So, you know, that's a personal one-on-one coaching program that you have with him, and then you have a full-hour training call on Friday, every Friday morning. And,
is that on your Mana site, or where is that?
It's on the manatrain.net website. Look under coaching programs, and you'll see Coach Roy ICANN program. And you can start it anytime you want. You can start it. It's a 14-week program starting anytime you want to make the commitment to be in that program. And you have 14 more.
And then the last comment is, I did get the email again this morning. I just looked at the old ones, but I don't know what else to do to get in on the training call.
On the email? Wait, you mean the emails?
Right.
Let me do that independent off this call, Gwen. You and I'll get on the phone. We'll make it happen.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Deal. There's a commitment for you. Okay. All right, sweetie. Anyone else? Great. Thanks, Gwen. And thank everybody. Love you guys. Have a great week.
Billy Joe, can I please have Lydia's phone number again?
Yeah,
972-660-9006.
Question?
Yeah.
Wait,
one more
I don't
question.
Have the rest of that phone number.
9006.
9006.
You got it.
Right.
Mary
okay,
Jo.
Mary Jo.
Yeah.
Is there any part of the?
This sounds like Marsha Douglas. Am I right?
Yes, it is. I want to get it in quick. My husband's doing taxes today and wonders if there's any part of the incentive trip that we can deduct.
Any part of the incentive trip? The entire incentive trip. You put it as a miscellaneous deduction on the backside of your Schedule C as miscellaneous item, and you put training/incentive trip, and you put the full dollar value that Manatech tries to include in your income.
Oh.
How do you like that?
All right, I love it.
Well, because we had trainings, right?
Because
you had
trainings the whole time. And all Manatech is saying is, if I would have paid you the cash, you then took the cash and paid for the trip. You paid to go on a training trip is what you did.
Great.
So you're deducting it as an expense of your business that you paid to be on a training trip. Okay?
So you get the night before you spent at the motel and the dinners and all
that? I think you have a hard time negotiating that. Unless you were there for a purpose to do Manatech, if you can tie in a purpose, then I would. I'd feel free to do that as well. Or if there's a reason why you couldn't get out there, you had
to
be out there earlier, then you can take that too. But make sure you have documentation supporting that as well. Okay?
Okay. Thank
you. All right. Love you guys.
Okay. Bye.
Mary Jo?
Bye.
Yeah. Oh, one more. Come on. I got to go.
Are you going to be putting Melissa Pierce's call on your website?
Do I have Melissa? It's going to be posted today or tomorrow.
Great.
I just got
Thank
it
you.
Yesterday from Marion Culhane.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Thanks, Mary Jo. You were great last Saturday.
The moderator has disconnected. The